fennel. More at Pajamagram.com.
Good morning. Welcome to the Sustainable Living Program with John Butts. John is here every other Monday, and he switches off with Eve Praying Plus, and John is back. John, how are you?
Oh, pretty good, Rob. How are you doing?
I'm good.
What about this weather?
Perfect. This is perfect. This is what we wait for all summer, right?
It's kind of warm, isn't it?
A little too hot? You know, that new study says that in the last 100 years, global temperatures have risen 1.8 degrees.
Yep. Now, that's Fahrenheit.
That's right.
If it was centigrade, we'd be in a lot of hot water.
We're still in hot water.
I know we are. I'm getting ready to start doing my cane syrup in the winter, and I was taking my cane mill around to trying to get parts for it, and I was driving around Friday afternoon in Tampa, you know, enjoying the traffic and the big trucks passing me, and it's funny, when I was a kid, you know, we had like race cars. Today we have race trucks, Rob, you know, these big trucks, four-wheel drive trucks that are 3 or 4 feet off the ground, and they race each other up and down our highways, just burning up fuel and all that. And about the same time, about 3:30, Sean came on and told me about this report. And I said, you know, this is kind of insanity, isn't it?
About the global warming report.
Yeah. But that's the way it is. Hey, I'd like to start by thanking our listeners, supporters here at WMNF. Of course, our staff and our volunteers and our board members for all you do to keep this great radio station on the air. My show's kind of got all messed up because of the hurricane and after the hurricane. And today I was kind of planning on doing a show on fermentation because there's a workshop over in Stuart coming up. And I just thought I'd mention that. And I'm planning on doing one in December on fermentation. I think we had Standard Cats a couple of times on the show. Great shows, and they're programs that are good for your gut. But this fermentation festival is coming up on Saturday, November 11th, this coming Saturday. The Ground Floor Farm and St. Pete Ferments will be hosting the first annual Florida Ferment Fest in Stuart, Florida. The event features special guests, speakers and practitioners from around the state. Activities include workshops, panel discussions, vendor markets, brew gardens, crowd share, amateur competitions, a big fest, and a lot of lacto camaraderie. To get tickets and find out more, go to floridafermentfest.com or contact Sarah at stpeteferments.com. On past shows, we've talked about Florida as a sunshine state and how we kind of lag behind these other states in the amount of installed home solar systems. I forget what was it last spring. We had the director from the Florida Solar Energy Center, and it was less than 1% of our power was actually coming from home power systems. But it sounds like, and this is in the news, and I heard it on MNF, so it must be very factual.
Must be true.
It must be true that Florida's finally starting to catch up, and we're, leading the nation in the amount of permits for new installs on solar systems. So on today, we'll be talking about this rise in solar installations, and there's going to be an upcoming solar tour, and we're going to talk about that and the election in St. Pete and the St. Pete Eco Village. I can't wait to talk about that. That ought to be a lot of fun. Our guests are Florida political chair for the Sierra Club. Dave's a member of our local Sierra Suncoast chapter, and as you would suspect, he's passionate about our Florida environment. Welcome to WNF, David Harbinger.
Thanks, John.
Great to have you here. And I want to thank Dave. He is part of our board here at WMNF. Thank you for your service here. Three-time board member?
Yes, just starting my third term in November.
Wow. Well, thank you very much. We really appreciate that, what you do. Also, as a member of Suncoast Sierra's chapter, he's an associate professor of biology at the University of Tampa, where he does sharp research and works with the university's sustainability program. Welcome, David Huber.
Dan Huber. So
Dan,
good to be here.
Thanks so much. Too many D's. I'm sorry. And our third guest is the co-founder and current co-director of the St. Pete Eco Village, a nonprofit focused on education and nature. It's a demonstration campus focused on ecological and sustainability, plus committed to changing laws in regarding to urban, agricultural, renewable energy, and building design. Welcome to WMNF, Chris Kendrick.
Good morning, John. Thank you for having us today.
Great to have you here. Great to see you guys. First, David, being Florida's Sierra political chair, tell us first a little bit about our local chapter and then what's happening in Tallahassee.
All right. So the Florida chapter of the Sierra Club is actually the second or third largest, behind only the Los Angeles area and the state of New York. So it's a very large movement in our state, very large in our community locally, as both there are three local Sierra clubs in the WMNF listening area, actually four. One is Suncoast over in the St. Petersburg and Pinellas County and points north. Then Tampa Bay, Manatee, Sarasota is a third group. And then out in Polk County is Ancient Islands. So we have quite a bit of environmental activism in the area through the club, and a lot of different issues between phosphate mining and the beach issues that are out there and water quality across the state. So many things that are common but also unique inside of each of those groups. But moving up to the Florida legislative level for just a moment, you know, we know they're in committee weeks right now. So there's a lot of things that are going on in terms of bills being introduced and discussions. The actual session starts in early January. There are five key areas that the Sierra Club is focusing on with the state legislation this year. One is banning fracking. We'd like to see that move forward this year. Second is environmental funding. Since 2014, when the state voters voted over 75% to fund environmental conservation, we continue to be frustrated by what's going on at the state level there. So we'd like to see land acquisition increase on that front. In concert with that is water supply. We know that water supply, both the quantity and the quality, are at great risk in the state of Florida, particularly under the growth that we expect to see in the coming decades. So it's important that we address water supply as well. Fourth, the transition to renewable energy, which I know we'll talk more about with the solar activities that we've got queued up today. And then lastly is regulation, being careful about the preemption to home rule and exactly what's going on at the state level that way.
Cool. And Dan, you deal with local politics, and we're going to talk about the St. Pete election, but you know, just curious about the University of Tampa and your research there in the sustainability programs. So what's going on there at the University of Tampa?
It's a growing program. We just got our first academic program in sustainability on the books, and bit by bit, it's a grassroots movement that's really starting to bear some fruit, and we're really excited about it. There's a lot of really interesting innovations happening in the behind the scenes of the university in terms of energy efficiency and reducing water consumption, and so bit by bit, we're hoping to become a leader in the Tampa Bay area.
Mm-hmm. And Shark? Research?
Yeah, that's right. The other hat that I wear is as a shark researcher. When I was a kid, a cousin of mine got attacked by a shark, and I've basically been chasing sharks around for 30 years.
Cool. So great to have you here.
Thank you.
And Chris, we'll be talking a little later in the show about solar and the Eco Village, but that maybe first let's just mention the solar tour. Where is it and when is it?
Okay, well, it's actually coming up November 11th at 8:30 a.m. It's going to start at the Eco Village, which is at 302 15th Street North. The tour is going to run approximately till 12:30. It's $10 for a tour, but if you also want to have a garden lunch with our farm manager or farm director, it's $15.
We're not supposed to mention price on it.
Oh, can't
say.
Sorry,
I should have told you.
Sorry, but it's in partnership with the St. Pete Eco Village, the Suncoast Sierra Club, and the Women's League of Voters.
What city is it in?
It's going to be in St. Petersburg, and so it's going to be... we're going to get to see examples of some of our local businesses and neighbors and what they've done to their homes beyond just solar. It's about Tesla cars and compressed natural gas cars and what they've done to prepare their homes for solars, and also what local businesses have done as well. Whether it's gray water systems, solar hot water heaters, cisterns. I mean, there's a lot of innovative things that our neighbors and local businesses have done right here in St. Pete.
Cool. cool. And I don't, is there any other, I know you, University of South Florida used to do some solar tours, but I haven't gotten any emails in that regard. So you know of any others in the area?
Well, actually, the USF St. Pete campus is part of the tour solar home and business tour next weekend, November 11th. Yes. And people can go online to, they can go to any one of our Facebook pages to find out information, or they could contact the EcoVillage directly, or the Sierra Club, or the Women's League of Voters.
Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, and anybody's having that during the call-in part of the show, having a tour maybe in Sarasota or something like that, call in and share that information with us. But
yeah, it's really about finding people that have done amazing sustainable things right in your community and learning from them, because that's the best knowledge is the local knowledge.
Sure. And I guess we'll go ahead and start the show by kind of talking about the St. Pete election, Rob, and you know, Sean and you have been kind of covering this, and I know there's a lot of important environmental issues that are going on there. You know, what kind of questions should we be asking here a day before the election?
Well, I think the big question is Mayor Christman guilty of neglect when it comes to this the sewage system in St. Petersburg? That's the issue that he's getting beat up on in this election. Is that a fair read of what the mayor has done in St. Pete?
Yeah, I would have to say it's not, Rob. You know, the issues that the city of St. Petersburg has, similar to many other municipalities in the state of Florida, is decades in the making. It really took a number of administrations, and even going back before Baker was in office in the late 90s and through most of the 2000 stretch, underinvestment had taken place. I'm sure you and your listeners are very aware there was a consent decree against the city back in 1998. And we operated under that for 10 years. Well, the only reason you get there is because you hadn't done things for the decades before that. So you can really probably go back over 40 years and say the city of St. Petersburg has been not as thoughtful as it should have been with the maintenance and investment in its community. I think what the mayor was guilty of was very poor communication. And there was an opportunity there to be in front of things and be up front. And that opportunity was missed, and it created a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of backlash. But I do believe that the city, both the mayor and the current city council, have done a lot to move us forward and have committed to the right actions. Over $300 million has been committed to the wastewater sewage plants and the capacity to be able to be constructed in the coming years, the capacity at the how much water can be treated on a daily basis. I believe we've gone from 100 million gallons a day to 160 million gallons a day this year. So tremendous effort. And if you live in St. Petersburg, as we do, you can't help but see the guys out working the lines and really replacing, whether it's the sewer caps that we see on the roads or the actual lines in the streets that have been torn up and replaced. It's been all over the city.
So the Fish and Wildlife Commission came out with this report that was made public a few days ago that said that 89 felonies were committed in the release of treated and untreated sewage during the Christman administration. Now, there's not going to be any charges filed because the state attorney has said they don't know who to charge, but felonies were committed under Christman's watch. So should the public be concerned about that?
Yeah, I think whenever you've got when there's been crimes that have been alleged to have taken place, it's always very disappointing. And it clearly speaks to some type of a failure of either supervision or communication within the chain of command there. I reflect back that, you know, there was a lot about, you know, Christman electing to move through with closing the Albert Witted plant back in 2015.
There's a sewage plant there, yeah.
Yeah, and so that original decision was brought forward by Rick Baker when he was the mayor in the early 2000s. And then under Mayor Foster, the mayor in between the two Ricks, actually was the one who authorized the closing. And the city council in, I believe it was 2011, took that action. So you've got a whole series of things that are going on that way. What's interesting is the director of public works during that period of time was on record multiple times of saying that Albert Witted could be closed. There was enough capacity at the new treatment plant down on the southern end of St. Petersburg that Albert Witted was no longer necessary. So when you go back to what accountability do you have, the people at the top, the mayors, have to be accountable to what goes on inside their administration, but you also have to be thoughtful around the people that they rely on to provide them good information, the experts that they bring in and or were there and that they rely upon. And I think that speaks a lot to what some of the things we're seeing in the that
so
report.
One last question. This is the way that former Mayor Christman is trying to attack current mayor, or former Mayor Baker, rather, is trying to attack current Mayor Christman. And what Baker's people say is that during one of the recent emergencies, partially treated sewage was injected into deep water wells under Albert Witted, and that eventually that partially treated sewage is going to percolate back up and affect maybe the aquifer. Is that a fair attack?
Oh, the Sierra Club does not like deep water injection wells. We for the same reason we want to ban fracking in the state. The fact that we have limestone as the bedrock that we're built upon, and it cracks very easily. It's not an impervious surface. So anytime we're putting wastewater, sewage, chemicals down into a deep water injection well, we do not believe that's the appropriate thing. Now, having said that, given the opportunity to put it into your surface waters or to put it down into a deep water injection well, we think and we understand why that's a better choice in the near term, but we do not want to see that be a long-term solution for the city. We do want to see that evolved into where the treatment capacity can handle that type of event. But it is something that, in order to comply with the, as we understand it, the DEP's requirements on how the wastewater is dealt with, the deep water injection wells are a temporary evil, if you will.
What was Baker's record on the environment?
So we did, whenever we get into the spot, we do endorsements of the Sierra Club. We are very thorough in and take our responsibilities very seriously in terms of what we do. So we look at past voting records, at leadership while people were in office. We interview and we fill out questionnaires with people who have not been in office. When we went back into the comparison between Mayor Baker while he was in office and Mayor Christman while he's been in office, we found Mayor Christman to be much more environmentally sound. The recycling program is a good example. Recycling did not go live during Mayor Baker's time period. We were a green community, but it was at the lowest levels. It really wasn't an aspirational level to it. It was kind of more of a check off the box as opposed to a strive to become something more. We've seen Mayor Christman take more positive actions to drive us forward and moving us to the STAR community and looking to be able to do things to increase us that way. I touched on recycling, the Integrated Sustainability Action Plan, which tries to bring in climate change and resiliency in the face of rising sea levels, renewable energy, all those things, a comprehensive way of thinking about moving our city forward from a sustainability. And one last thing I would touch on, and that's the entire concept of back to the water and sewer, having a master plan in place. It was interesting, both mayors have operated under consent decrees, right? So Mayor Baker comes in and the consent decree goes into order and he invests accordingly during that period of time. But at the end of the term, as the consent decree comes off, the investment in our water and sewer infrastructure goes down. In Mayor Christman's situation, similar problems. We have this large spill. We're now under a consent decree. But the city council and the mayor have responded this time by putting together the first time in memory a master plan for our sewer and wastewater infrastructure, which is a much bigger statement about how we're going to respond to this in the next 20 years than it is about what we've done in the past. And that's really what we need to focus on.
Cool. Dan, anything you'd like to add to that?
No, Dave just said it great. I think that for the first time, we have this vision of what we want the future to be, and it's people in our community who are voting for this vision. The Integrated Sustainability Action Plan makes St. Petersburg a leader, not just in the Southeast, but one of the leaders in the United States. It's St. Pete is just amongst I think it was the 30th city in the United States to have a plan on the books that actually set a target date for being on 100% renewable energy, and that is something that I'm.
When did the city do that? Just a few months ago, right?
They're still in the planning stages of it. There's a group of consultants that have been brought in, which are now going to spell out, much more carefully delineate what the plan is actually going to be. But it basically puts us in a 25 to 30 year target date of being on 100% renewable energy.
Was that an action by the city council alone, or did Christman have input into that?
Well, it came out of the Office of Sustainability. Dave, do you have...
Yeah, so Mayor Christman put a proclamation out there, and then the city council followed up on that and actually put into place more teeth behind it to move us in that path.
Well, I guess maybe we'll kind of switch towards solar and the St. Pete Solar Co-op, and I guess its involvement there I guess it's involved a little bit with the League of Women Voters and also St. Pete Eco Village. But first, maybe we ought to get a little history about St. Pete. This is kind of new, isn't it?
It is new, yeah. We're in our 11th month where we consider ourselves a startup nonprofit, but we have a large residency component, and then we have a large urban farm and garden that our farm founders have started on 10-10-10, so about 7 years ago, so that's been around for a long time. But, I mean, we're focused on demonstrating the policies that we want to change and creating a place where sustainable living can take place and action can be created. I mean, we're talking about the wastewater, the system, and the sewer system in the city of St. Petersburg and spending $300 million or $500 million, we want to look at creative and innovative solutions for the future, talking about gray water and composting toilets and whatever other solutions are available that other cities and countries have done around the world, and do that at the Eco Village as a demonstration, partnering with local businesses and entrepreneurs and research institutions like Patel College of Sustainability or the University of Tampa and the Sierra Club to demonstrate the policies we want to change with the technology that's going to make it easier and more affordable.
Cool. You know, it's something that always kind of rings in my head. It's Arizona. They have a water crisis. The other way, not enough. And to solve it, what they've done is come up with, you know, designs for people that are permittable to put composting toilets in their house and use, and gray water systems too. But it's you know, this same problem, just kind of in a different way. Too much water, not enough water. So let's talk again about the solar tour. What do you have in place there?
So what do we have at the Eco Village to show the tour? I mean, we've got some tiny houses that we demonstrate. We're in the process of making one of our buildings net zero. We're actually making one of our buildings off-grid from the electric supply system. You can also look at our farm. I mean, our farm is amazing. We have a solar dryer. We have a composting system. We've got, we're implementing a worm system. But we have one of the best and largest community garden and farms in the city of St. Petersburg as a demonstration to teach people how to grow their own food. We're never going to be able to grow enough food for everybody, but we can teach them how to grow their own food. And we've got some great teachers and community resources and partners to make that happen.
Is this kind of an offshoot of the Faith House?
So the Faith House is the facility that we operate. That used to be a drug and alcohol rehabilitation facility. And they were sort of focused on treating 30 to 40 different people that were going through different issues. And our focus now is to have 30 to 40 different people that are focused on making change within the community, whether they're an artist using recycled art, or, you know, they're a chef focused on vegan and culinary cooking, or they're a farmer, or they've got some new business idea like Rain Cube. You know, it's taking rainwater collection system but tying it to the internet and creating cryptocurrency. So they're new. They're not new ideas. They're just, they have new energy and they've got new technology that's going to be able to make it easier and more applicable to many more people.
Mm-hmm. I think I want to talk just a little bit about the solar co-ops, and they've kind of changed their name. Am I understanding that right? Or
that is correct. The Sierra Club.
There was an event Saturday in Orlando about this, and they changed it from the solar. It's the same thing, but they just changed the name. It's something like a partnership or something.
Yeah, it does have a much longer name. Dave will look that up for you.
I'm working it.
But yeah, I think the solar co-op is, there's going to be, I think, three offerings next year. And what's interesting is the city of St. Petersburg is also, I think, going to be putting some money, hopefully, into that to make it happen. I mean, I think this last year we did it with the Sierra Club and the Women's League of Voters, and I think they had 42 people sign up. But it's really a group buying club, and so it's making solar more affordable with the buying power, and that's interesting to see. And some of the homes on the tour show that as well.
Mm-hmm. So how many co-ops are there in Florida now? Do you have that information? Here, I should have done my homework.
I don't, John. I don't have that information.
All right, so this is the Sustainable Living Program. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Our guests are Dave Harbeitner and Dan Huber. Both are with the Suncoast Sierra Club chapter, and they're with the political committee of the Suncoast Sierra Club. And also here is Chris Henrich, who's co-founder of the Eco Village in St. Petersburg. And Chris, is the Eco Village right there at 302 15th Street North? Is that where you're located?
It is, yeah.
Right in the heart of town.
Yeah, right in downtown St. Pete.
Wow.
I mean, we want to take, you know, if you've ever been out to John's Farm, it's an amazing example of sustainable living and the urban organic farm. I mean, it's not urban. It's, you know, 80 acres. But, you know, most people aren't going to go out to John's Farm. And so we want to bring that technology,
John hopes they will.
Well, we can partner with John by, you know, bringing his products to the Eco Village. But, you know, it's a forced education because you can see what we're doing right in, you know, we're three blocks from Central Avenue. We're right by the new police station. We're right by Tropicana Field. So we're right in the heart of the city.
All right, great. So people should, it's easy
come
to
come take a tour, know, yeah. Come
walk down Central Avenue, have a beer, and then walk up to Eco Village, right?
Yep, yeah. Okay. We have our community garden work days Wednesday and Sunday. You can come out and get some produce or meet some of our farmers and gardeners and learn how you can grow food in your neighborhood.
Well, if you've got a question for our guests, call us up. Here's our phone number. It's 813-239-9663, or here's an email address, dj@wmnf.org. So you can send your email question in to us at dj@wmnf.org. David sent this question. I think this goes to our Sierra Club guest. He says, what do you guys think about the Mosaic Plant City processing plant temporarily shutting down? I'm a little worried that Mosaic might have facilities and waste sites that will be neglected by the shutdown. Are either of you involved in the phosphate issue?
No, not specifically.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, not well enough to be able to address the question. It's a great question, but I just don't have enough information to be able to answer.
Fair enough. That's really,
you know, I know
best
a lot
answer.
Of the residents in Plant City are kind of, you know, there's jobs lost, which, you know, they probably were the wrong jobs, but it's still, you know, what do these people do? And mm-hmm. I know it's a concern there.
And Beverly wants us to know that there's a kimchi fermentation workshop mm-hmm. at Sweetwater Farm this Sunday at 1:00. So I think, did we mention the fermentation workshop earlier, John?
Well, this is at Sweetwater, and I guess it's the same day, so
okay,
they should have
so
got
competing,
together.
Competing workshops. Okay, that's unfortunate. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org.
I did have an update for you on the name of the Florida Sun. It's now called... Solar United Neighbors of Florida. So Solar United Neighbors of Florida is the actual title now.
Cool. But, you know, I just kind of, the concept of an eco village, what, you know, maybe the roots of that? You really were in real estate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And all of a sudden now you're kind of pushing this kind of nonprofit here. What was the kind of the deal there? What kind of...
We wanted to, you know, I've been in real estate, but then we've also been in community development. So we've helped start one of the first co-ops in St. Petersburg focused on affordable housing. I also have had other properties that cater to international students that are coming to St. Petersburg to study at the Tomlinson School or work at one of our local hospitals. So I've been transitioning to community development for a while now. And then just wanted to really create a place that demonstrates sustainable living and sustainable technology and really helping to promote entrepreneurship and social entrepreneurship and more specifically in partnering with local institutions and nonprofits and universities because, you know, the Pinellas County Science Center's closed and Sarasota Science Center's closed and Mosey's temporarily out of business. And we're not talking about, you know, going to the moon and going to the Mars. We're focused on local issues, you know, urban agriculture, tiny houses, affordable living, off-grid living, energy efficient technology, trying to keep it simple.
Mm-hmm. And you're building a new house right now presently that's kind of incorporates all that stuff, right?
Yeah, I was a little unsure about if I wanted to talk about it too soon, but yeah, we are working on a building that's going to come online next month, and I'll just say that it's going to be very creative and innovative, and you should come out and take a tour, so I'll leave a little suspense there.
Yeah, the group came out to the farm and volunteered at the farm, and, you know, he kind of coached me on, well, we can't say this, and we can say that, but I think we can talk about intentional communities on WMNF and not be, you know, kind of...
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's a little bit like the urban agriculture issue. I mean, it's illegal to sell locally grown or urban ag produce that's not grown on commercial or industrial land, but, you know, the city of St. Petersburg supports that. They want to create more community gardens, but, you know, it's not legal. So, but is, you know, is anybody going to get in trouble for it? well, we're willing to push the envelope a little bit.
Dan, I got to ask you, did your brother's friend survive the shark attack?
My cousin.
Your cousin.
He was totally fine. He's got a cool
yeah.
scar and a great story.
All right.
But it was just one of those formative experiences in your childhood. It just flips a switch in your head.
You're Mr. Shark.
Yeah.
One
yeah.
of them.
Yeah.
All right. So if people have questions about sharks, they can also call us up on this show, right?
By all means.
All right.
Let's try to focus on sustainability, but we can pepper in a few shark questions.
Let me ask you about sustainability, because UT has been growing the last few years. UT has seen an explosion in students. What's your sense of I mean, because I can remember school in the 70s, and the environmental movement was huge in the 70s, but are kids on campus these days, are they interested in the environment, and how interested are they?
They're very interested. In the time I've been at the university for about 12 years, and in the time that I've been there, it's about doubled in student population, which is really extraordinary growth. And we've been routinely surveying incoming students about their perceptions about what they expect out of sustainability from their university, how a university's sustainability program factors into their decision about where to attend, comparing where they come from versus where they are now. And students have high expectations. There is no doubt about it. It has become the norm in our society. It's become Essentially, it's become a cultural norm to the point where they walk through our doors at the University of Tampa, and they're expecting to see those programs in place.
Because UT is not one of the most liberal campuses. It's very diverse. It's got some liberals on it, a lot of conservatives on the campus, right?
Yeah, I think there's a very good mix.
Yeah, yeah. So in terms of recycling and those kind of things that are standard everywhere, do kids expect there to be recycling in the cafeteria and in the dorms and all that?
They do, and I'm routinely contacted by students who feel that the university's program isn't quite where it should be, and students really are. I mean, right now we have in our campus community, I think, a beautiful example of grassroots organization and grassroots democracy. There are students that are coming in. They are the paying customers, and they think that certain things need to change, and they are using their voices to create the changes in their environment, and it's an exciting time to be a part of it.
All right, again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. You can send your email question into us at dj@wmnf.org. We are all over the map. We're talking about the St. Pete elections from the point of view of environmentalists. We're talking about sustainability. We're talking about Eco Village in St. Petersburg. And we'll throw in a question, if you want, about sharks.
I did have an update for it, to John's question on the solar co-ops. There are actually 11 that are currently open in the state of Florida, and there are 5 that have already become fully subscribed.
Dave, just describe for us, for folks that are hearing about solar co-ops for the first time, and John has discussed this a lot here on WMNF, and other shows have too, but what is a solar co-op?
You know, at its core, I think many people are familiar with the co-op, and it's the concept of people coming together and using their purchasing power collectively to purchase from an organization at a better price point. And that's really what the solar co-op is about. You know, we know that many people, to exactly what Dan was just talking about with students today, people would like to have a more sustainable life. They appreciate that there's ways that they can reduce their carbon footprint. And solar energy production is one of those. But it's cost prohibitive for many of us. So the solar co-op allows a group of us, whether it's 50 to 200, to come together and pool our purchasing power, negotiate with a number of different potential providers, and get that price point brought down. Now, I have not actually participated in a co-op, but my understanding is it's about a third price reduction from doing solar on your own to what the co-op is able to achieve.
So it's the power of buying with a group, with the power of a group.
Absolutely. And there are actually 3 groups in the listening area. One is in Pinellas right now, one is in Hillsborough, and one is down in Sarasota. And they're not limited geographically to those areas. That's just where they're based out of, so people, meetings can be held, and it's easier for people to be able to be informed about what's happening.
You mentioned 11 co-ops across the state, including the 3 here in the Tampa Bay area. Is there one website that people can go to if they want to find out about the co-op movement here, the solar co-op movement here in Florida?
Yeah, so it's a little long word-wise.
I like the Florida Sun better.
Yeah, so I'll tell you, if you do flsun.org, it will get you there, but it's solarunitedneighbors.org. So again, solarunitedneighbors.org.
And I think another thing that's really cool about the, you know, is the knowledge. You know, these people work with the co-ops to help, you know, disseminate, you know, like what is right and what is wrong. So you're not just you and a contractor, it's a group and a contractor, and it's just like that, you know, shared knowledge, and everybody knows what's going on and what's right, and I think that's the best way to go, you know, because a lot of us don't know anything about solar, you know, like a contractor could come out and say, well, you know, it's going to be this and this and this, and you're sitting there with a fish hook in your mouth.
Yeah. And, okay, so our next email is setting up a competition between colleges. So this emailer says, New College of Florida in Sarasota was one of the first to have an environmental studies program in the entire U.S. So it must be a New College grad who's bragging there a bit.
Understood.
Okay, any dispute?
Oh, I don't dispute it at all. Yeah, I mean, as Floridians, I think in part we recognize that the environment is philosophically and economically important. And I think that while there's always a lot that we can do, Florida, I think, has a great history of people advocating for the environment. And if our university system has been a part of that, I think that's wonderful.
Second question is, why was St. Petersburg so slow to adopt curbside recycling? Maybe that's for you, Dave.
Sure. So I can't answer as to why the city was as slow as it was. Unfortunately, we had a soundbite in one of the last debates between the two candidates, Mayor Christman and Baker. And ex-Mayor Baker was on record as saying he wasn't sure if he would support the continuation of the curbside recycling program. So, yeah, that's very unfortunate to hear. I think it's pretty well documented that the waste that is removed from landfills and things through recycling is, in and of itself, a positive reason to not do that or to not have those items going into the landfill. So there was some of that leadership that was there historically in the city just didn't believe that it was a good program to do. And it really became through the community at large that we got to the elective recycling. And once Mayor Christman got in, that we moved all the way to curbside recycling being available. And actually, I know that the city would love to be able to go to the next level in terms of being able to get to multi-housing units and do things commercial level, but all things in due time. And there are other things that they feel they need to focus on before they would get to that next level on recycling.
Let's go to Tess, who's calling from St. Petersburg. Hi, Tess. How are you?
Hi, I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. So what's your question?
Well, I'm in the Suncoast Sierra Club with my couple colleagues there, and I'm also a huge fan of the St. Pete Co-op. And basically, I'll make this quick. Wondering if you guys can expand a little bit on the sustainability office that's headed by Sharon Wright and what this election tomorrow would mean as far as hopefully expanding that office if Mayor Christman is our mayor for the next 4 years, and you know what the consequences may be if Rick Baker wins, so that people can understand just how important that sustainability office to the residents of St. Petersburg. It's a really important race tomorrow. I hope everyone gets out and votes. Sorry to stand on my soapbox here and lecture, but it's a really, really close race, and we need everyone to get out there. So I will drop off so I can listen to you.
All right, Tess, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tess.
It is going to be a close race. So, okay, so what about the sustainability office?
So the Office of Sustainability, I think, is one of Mayor Christman's primary achievements. The Office of Sustainability is where the Integrated Sustainability Action Plan originated from. It is one of those things that for the environmentally conscious community of St. Pete, it's one of those sort of like shining stars that we hang our hats on right now. And should Mayor Christman not be elected tomorrow, there is a realistic possibility that the Office of Sustainability and all of this momentum that we have could simply disappear. So it's a function of who will be mayor, basically, as of Wednesday. In addition to that, it's also a function of who we elect to our city council. So there are current people, there are some existing folks that are seeking re-election on the city council, as well as some people who are seeking to be elected for the first time, who are really significant advocates for the environment. For re-election is Darden Rice, who's from City Council District 4. She is arguably one of the largest environmental advocates in the entire region. And much of what has been done in St. Petersburg, many of these things that we're proud of, are in large part owing to her ideology that she has brought into the city council with the establishment of the Environment, Natural Resources, and Sustainability Subcommittee that now hears a lot of the policy that we're looking at. She's been a tremendous supporter of the environment, and she is up for re-election tomorrow. In addition to that, we also have a few new candidates, Barkley Harless in District 2 and Gina Driscoll in District 6, both of whom have been endorsed by the Sierra Club.
A win by either one would be good? Is that... Or they're in different seats.
They're for different seats. Barkley Harless is for District 2, and Gina Driscoll is for District 6. And both of them, so through the endorsement process, we meet and interview all the candidates. They submit a questionnaire to us that essentially teases apart their ideology and their actions. And based upon all these responses, we then work through a pretty lengthy process going from our local group all the way up to the state level. And through that process, the people that we've endorsed are Rick Kreisman for re-election as mayor, Darden Rice for re-election to City Council District 4, and Barkley Harless and Gina Driscoll to be elected for the first time to City Council.
So I want to ask you, in terms of the mayor's race, the Kreisman versus Baker, what are their stances on global warming and how it's affecting St. Petersburg? Because, you know, along the boardwalk, or not the boardwalk, but along the sidewalk near Coffee Pot Bayou and going down to the Vinoy Basin, in a heavy rain, the water comes over, and it's already looking, you know, worse and worse for the neighborhoods along the water down there. And then some streets in St. Petersburg are flooding during heavy rains. So Kreisman and Baker, where do they stand on global warming and sea level rise?
I think Kreisman is all in. He recognizes that it's not an economic debate. It's not even honestly a philosophical debate. It's not a debate at all. There is a remarkable amount of scientific evidence to support all of this. Those people that deny it are typically coming from some form of an economic ideology that doesn't essentially want change to happen, because that change will challenge the status quo for earnings. So the extent to which capitalism and the environment are essentially at odds with each other is very real in describing how we got to the point that we're at. But it's kind of a fallacy in thinking about where we go forward, because to think that protecting the environment means that we have to necessarily be at odds with economic growth is honestly absurd. I mean, we're talking about in the St. Pete Eco Village as an incubator for ideas that could solve as solutions. Once solutions go to scale in our economic system, all of a sudden it becomes the new normal. It becomes the green economy. And for the people that we've endorsed in these elections, they are people that are not only doing the specific things that indicate an environmental philosophy, an environmental consciousness, a stewardship for environmental resources, but they're also people who are looking to create economic development using the environment as an incubator, as a source of inspiration for new technologies.
All right. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. That was the voice of Dan Huber, who's a professor at UT, and he's a researcher on sharks, but he's also a part of the political committee of the Suncoast Sierra chapter. And also here is Dave Harbeitner, who's with the Suncoast Sierra Club chapter on the political committee, and Chris Henrich, who is co-founder of the Eco Village, which is located right in the heart of St. Petersburg at 302 15th Street North in St. Pete, right near the police department. Here's another email. It comes from Joe. He says, "Where is John's farm, and how do I get involved?"
Mars.
Do you take volunteers, John?
Yeah, we take wolfers. No, we take volunteers, and you know, we're ecofarmsfl.org, and
look it up. Joe's in Dover, so he's not too far away from you. Yeah.
Aren't you going to be processing some cane sugar coming up soon?
Yeah, I'm going to have the Sunday after Thanksgiving at the farm, and I'll probably try to promote that event a little bit, make a little cash.
Dan and Dave, I want to ask you about this. This is something we talked about a few weeks ago here on the show, and that is there's a gun range right across from Sawgrass Lake Park in North St. Petersburg, and part of the city's freshwater system, which is supplied in part from northern Hillsborough, northern Pasco County, some of the pipes that deliver fresh water to downtown St. Petersburg go through Sawgrass Lake Park. Sawgrass Lake Park has been contaminated by lead, and those pipes, at least according to one of our guests recently, is leaking. Do you know anything about that? And is there a danger, do you think, to the fresh water supply, the drinking water supply in St. Pete?
Yeah, so this is, I'm not as fresh... current on that topic as I'd like to be allowed to answer the question. I would agree completely with the premise that the shooting range was there. There is definitely lead present there. The cities' hands are tied, the last time I understood. This was a DEP, and the DEP had basically pardon the language, washed their hands and basically said, we're okay with this. And, you know, this reflects back to the political decisions we make. The DEP has been taken over by the governor's appointments, and the governor has clearly made that a captured agency that is much more aligned with the economic interests of the current powers than it is with the health of our communities. And we need to find out more about what's going on specifically right now. But when we had pushed on this with the city back about 2 years ago, they literally could do nothing. It was completely in the DEP's hands.
Okay. Again, our phone number 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. So Chris, is your farm growing? Are your crops all in place for the winter?
We are. They are. Yeah. I mean, we're selling produce right now. We had some radishes. We've got some squash. We've got moringa. We've got some star fruit. So there's a variety of things that are starting to produce, and pretty soon we'll be having some farm to table events, and people can come out to the farm and buy some produce now.
Can they become members, or is it just you sell retail?
Retail. I mean, we're hoping to partner with other entrepreneurs or people that want to create some value added products. So if somebody's got an idea to take some of our produce and do a fermentation class or do some a fermentation business, we'd be interested to talk to them about that. But I mean, we're very new. We're only 11 months into this. We've got our farm directors. We've got a new farm manager just came over from Sweetwater Farm. So we're really looking to ramp up. We're looking to get some additional land from the city down the street from us so we can expand our farming operations.
Do you need volunteers?
Well, yeah, we have our volunteer days are Wednesday and Sunday. So those are our community volunteer days, 9 to 1 o'clock every Wednesday, every Sunday.
So what's the next crop to come in? You talked about radishes, which always come in early. So and squash.
I believe we have 40 different vegetables and fruits that are planted. I mean, a lot of lettuces and kales, and I know we've got green beans, and I'm not a farming expert. You know, we've got a farm director and a farm manager, but I know we've got over 40 vegetables planted and lots of fruit trees as well. That, I mean, moringa is pretty much always growing. But
so a moringa tree is very interesting. What do you use a moringa tree for?
Oh, well, I mean, there's a Moringa Growers Co-op. That's sort of a new business that's starting here in St. Petersburg and Tampa. That's a collaboration between the two counties. There's a guy in Tampa that just started. We started a business a while ago, and so he's looking to branch off. But Moringa has lots of nutritional values. I mean, I couldn't even get started on all the benefits of Moringa. I use it for a smoothie, so sometimes I put it in a smoothie in the morning. I know a lot of people put it in salads, but it comes in, it could be a they could put it in a capsule form. They could put it in a dried powder form. I mean, there's lots of different ways to take moringa.
Well, maybe tell us about the solar tour again.
The solar tour, yeah. So it's coming up next weekend on November 11th, and it's in partnership with Suncoast Sierra Club, the Women's League of Voters, and the St. Pete Eco Village. And it's going to start at the St. Pete Eco Village at 8:30 a.m. And you need to get registered before, because there is a bus that's going to go around to some of the local homes and our neighbors and businesses in St. Petersburg. But it's really a great way to see what our neighbors and businesses are doing and have done in St. Petersburg, in making the commitment to sustainable living or making their business sustainable. And whether it's their home car charging station or their gray water system. I mean, there's a guy, our architect, his house is on the tour, and he's got one of the only approved gray water systems in the city of St. Petersburg. And those are the things that we want to see more of in the future. But, you know, he doesn't want people coming to see his house. So that's why we need to create it at the Eco Village, so people can come and see what's being done.
How does a gray water system work for folks that are just hearing that term for the first time?
A gray water system works. Maybe John's got better way to describe that.
Well, I think it's your kitchen water and laundry water are kind of separate from the your black water. You know, black water would be from your toilet,
yeah,
stuff like that. So that's a little different. And where are some of the places that what really interests me is the Sierra headquarters there in St. Pete, their system. I'd love to see that. Is that on the tour?
That was on the tour last year. I mean, you can go tour the Suncoast Sierra building whenever you'd like. Some of the places that are on the tour this year are, there's three or four residents in St. Petersburg, along with USF, Planet Fitness, And, of course, the St. Pete Eco Village has another nonprofit. So,
Cool.
Now, Eileen writes this. I'm just curious if people want to reduce their carbon footprint. Going vegan is the best and most beneficial way for the environment. That's Eileen, who's in St. Petersburg. That's her comment.
Yeah, I don't think you get a lot of argument at this table. It definitely has a huge impact.
Well, you can vote three times every day by the food choices that you make. There's no doubt about it. And that is one of the simplest things that anybody can do to dramatically reduce their impact on the environment.
Okay, so why does the animal industry, the animal food industry, and why does the dairy industry, why does that contribute to harming the environment?
There's a variety of reasons. One is because of the quantity of land that gets used. So there's the land use issue has two sides to it. One is the land that all of the livestock are living on, but the other is all of the land that gets used to grow the food that then gets given to all of the livestock. So you have this two-sided land use issue. If you go through the whole production chain from all the resources that go into producing the vegetables that then get fed to the livestock and then all the additional resources that go into sustaining the livestock, there's just a tremendous amount of fuel that gets used throughout all of that process. If you then look at it specifically in the context of cattle, I mean, it's estimated about 1.5 billion cows on Earth. And just by virtue of an evolutionary process that these animals have that they use to break down plant matter, because we as vertebrates, like, we don't have the enzymes that actually break down the cell walls of plants. So cattle have struck up this beautiful symbiosis with bacteria that do it for them. And these bacteria live in a chamber of their stomach. So as the cattle and their bacterial symbionts are breaking down all of this plant matter, they actually release methane as a byproduct of it. So all of these 1.5 billion cows are on a regular basis. I mean, on a given day, one cow can produce about 55 gallons of methane. And as all that methane goes up into the atmosphere, methane has about roughly 25 times the greenhouse gas effect of carbon dioxide. So we're all extremely familiar with the risks of adding carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. If you add that much methane into the atmosphere, I mean, it makes the effects of carbon dioxide look negligible. So all of these dietary choices and the not only what you're eating, but where it comes from. I mean, if you can, like, say you wanted to keep eating meat, but you ate it from locally sourced things, so you just take simply the transportation emissions out of it, even that makes a tremendous difference.
John, are you smiling because of the potential for cow flatulence jokes? Is that why you were smiling
well, you know,
so broadly?
I hate to get into this with only 3 minutes left in the show, but, you know, I definitely have a different perspective on it. And we had Alan Savory on the program about 2 or 3 years ago, and I kind of, I don't know, you know, like, we have a lot of environmental lands that do well with cattle. I think herbivores have evolved with, you know, humans all along. And really, I think there were more bison in America, you know, like 1,000 years ago than there are cattle today. And that's what created the Great Plains, where we get our corn and all that stuff. And the truth of the matter is, I raise animals that eat nothing but what's there. And they manage stuff. I mean, I don't have the vines and the undergrowth. And I think there's so many, you know, like I said, the industrial cattle production is bad. And that's where the methane's. But truthfully, my granddaughter isn't listening, but I don't think the buffalo pass as much gas as our family.
Oh, my word. Well, we really, lots of controversy.
I mean, they eat grass. If they eat what they're supposed to eat,
well, and right now they're eating corn that you said that was grown on huge acres of land, and that's another problem.
Yes, and
too,
and not only that, but eating corn actually makes them sick. That's why about 60% of the antibiotics that are manufactured in the United States are given to our livestock, because we force them to eat corn that they didn't evolve to eat.
John, maybe this is the topic for your next show or one of your upcoming shows, because we don't have time to flesh it out. We've only got a minute left. And so if people want to find out more about Eco Village, Chris, what's coming up and where can they find Eco Village?
Yeah, we have our website, ecovillage.stpete.org. They can go on our Facebook page or come out and take a tour.
Okay, and you've got something coming up.
The Solar Co-op, the Solar Home and Business Tour is coming up this weekend, November 11th. But we have our Community Garden Work Days Wednesday and Sunday, every Wednesday, every Sunday, 9 to 1.
All right, and the tour starts at 8:30
yep.
on Sunday. And
Saturday.
Saturday,
11th.
And at 302 15th Street North?
Correct, yes.
All right. Sorry, I got that wrong. And then Dan Huber and Dave Harbeitner, the election for mayor of St. Petersburg is coming up tomorrow. It's a big deal. Did you do research that you published online about the candidates' positions on the environment where people can check for themselves? or where can they see your endorsements online?
Yeah, so unfortunately, the nature of our endorsement process, we do it in confidence, and so we do not, we ask that the candidates give us truthful answers, but we hold that back behind the scenes. The endorsement is the outcome. We do not share the questionnaire responses or anything like that. So you can get to it through the Florida Suncoast Sierra webpage. You do have to kind of click through a couple of spots because we're at both a nonprofit and a political organization, so you do have to kind of drive. But the key thing as a voter, and back to the greatest environmental impact you can have, who you vote for really matters.
All right. And Dan, you want to add anything in the last few seconds that we have here?
Yeah, just in addition to the candidates that we've endorsed in these races for tomorrow's election, we're also big supporters of the Penny for Pinellas referendum, and we would encourage everybody to vote for that as well.
All right. That's the voice of Dan Huber, and Dave Harbeitner is here, both with the Suncoast Sierra Club chapter, and Chris Henrich, co-founder of Eco Village. Thank you all for coming to WMNF and being so enlightening on such a range of topics.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah,
thanks for working together so much. Teamwork.
So, John, you got to do cow flatulence on some upcoming show.
Okay. You want me to bring a cow?
No, I don't want you to bring a cow. Leave the cow at home. So, John, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
At 10 o'clock on a Monday morning.
On a Monday morning, we're going to be talking about permaculture and the upcoming convergence in the summer.